Welcome to the MXGP Podcast Show on Vital MX. Your hosts, Lewis Phillips and Adam Wheeler, will discuss all things MXGP.
Woke up with a bend in the brain, stretching out with a cup of coffee. My muscles ache from days ago. Yawning stretch up towards the sky, zoning out while making breakfast. Just spinning straight into a dull oblivion. Their best years couldn't put a dent in mine. First ones even if they tried. Doing the best I can.
Hello and welcome back to the MXGP podcast show. We've been missing for a couple of weeks, but that's not our fault. MXGP took a weird two-weekend break after round four in Trentino and returned to the slop of Agadir, Portugal, this past weekend. Maybe the muddiest race we have had since 2019? 2017? We'll get into that. That's a debate in itself. I'm your host, Lewis Phillips, and this is the MXGP podcast show that is made possible by Polisport, All Balls Racing, and EVS. Of course, we extend our gratitude to those brands for their continued support of this booming podcast, which is taking the world by storm, because we have a new listener. Justin Barsha stopped me at the weekend and said, "That YouTube show you do is really good." And I was like, "What one?" And he said, "Well, I've got some questions about hurlings." And I was like, "Well, that's the one." Yeah, look at us. So hi, Justin. Hope you're well. Good job at the weekend. Yeah, good. I'm your host, Lewis Phillips. As I said, joined by the Paddock Pass podcast man, Adam Wheeler. Hello.
Hello, Lewis. And it is your fault that we haven't done a podcast for a couple of weeks now, because you said we would do a show in between Grand Prix. But understandably, you've been very busy with Supercross and sort of the thrilling championship picture that's going on there. And may I also say a belated happy birthday to you?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that very much.
How many years young?
I think I'm like 12 now.
Have you started shaving yet?
Yeah, just about, actually. I cut myself all over. That's why we couldn't do a podcast. I was like Scarface.
Go with the Gillette, you know, don't go with the Wilkinson or anything else, try the Gillettes.
No, to be honest, it did cross my mind to do a podcast in the time off, but A, I didn't want to bother you, and B, I kind of just wanted not to get in trouble for a couple of weeks. That was quite enjoyable.
Now we're back. So you're avoiding the storm.
Yep, so now we're back, so let's cause as much havoc as we possibly can. We will be joined by Paul Jonas in a couple of minutes. Also, I think I better turn my phone on because he's going to message when he's joining. But let's start.
He's on the
that.
Media train, right? He's on the media train. I mean, a very sort of impressive debut on the Pulp MX show. And now he's coming on the Vital MX MXGP show. Well, but very timely.
Do you think that, like, obviously we've been around since the start of Paul's GP career. I feel like he's really blossomed in like the last 2 years as like a media personality.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a consequence of just his personality generally. You know, he's kind of fun-loving, always easy to talk to, gives you an honest answer. And I think he's had a very interesting career. I mean, not only is he the standout athlete from Latvia, I mean, he made history when he won the World Championship 2017, I want to say, memory. Yeah, Prado won in 18-19. And, you know, he went from being this fantastic hot rookie straight into the Red Bull KTM, you know, factory racing setup. He created a few YouTube milestones, I think, for those ridiculous crashes. One in Mexico, I want to say, and also Sweden, perhaps. And, you know, that championship was amazing. Injured his knee, of course, dueling with Prado the following season. And then was rookie of the year, I believe, in his MXGP year. But, can you think of another rider in MXGP who's just had the amount of sort of injury woes that this guy has had over the past 5 years? I mean, there's a few contenders, to be fair, but, you know, I can't think of anyone else who's just sort of been through the mire.
Yeah, 2,163 days since his last GP win. In that time, he has basically been injured throughout. And that's kind of why I always had faith that this would come back, because it wasn't a case of him being slow or sucking or losing it. It was just a case of he couldn't get started. And it was unfortunate because he was pegged to be an MXGP title favorite, meant to scale the class like Prado has, like Sua has, and maybe he will still do that. He's just a bit behind now. But yeah, he's just had a tough, tough, tough road, and it was never meant to go this way. But that is sport.
Well, we're talking about the MXGP of Portugal, and let's be honest, they were exceptional circumstances and conditions in Águeda. As is wont to be at that circuit, it's either boiling hot or it tends to be raining, and sometimes both in the same weekend. But I think this sort of result has been coming for Pauls. I mean, a podium for sure. I think he stood on the box a couple of weeks ago. Was it in Trentino? And then, you know, he's got the speed to be fighting up there. And, you know, it's okay. He made the most. He kept upright when it counted in through the sludge in Portugal. But, you know, this was not a complete freak result. I mean, there are a couple of other riders, you could say, in the top 10 of the overall standings of each class where you think, okay, they've got personal best career results because they really made the most of the conditions. But Pauls is that was not such a freak, you know, classification on the day.
Yeah, great point. No one should discredit this because of the conditions. And the fact that he is fifth in the championship, 6 points behind Herlings, is a testament to the fact that he's been there since round one. If he had sucked and then won, he would be ninth in the championship. I will say this.
Do you feel sort of partially vindicated in our Honda duel when I tipped, you know, Rimmer Fernandez to be the, you know, a better Honda rider last year, and you tipped Pauls and you ended up having sort of, you know, red face, well, you know, a red crimson shade of face compared to my tip. And now it's kind of flipped around, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. And Pauls is actually just joining, so I'm glad that he's chosen this time to enter the conversation. Yeah, I am vindicated. I thought that this would happen last year, and it just took a little while longer. But hey, the best things in life are worth waiting for. And we have waited for the best thing of this podcast, which is the 2024 GP of Portugal winner, Standing Construct Honda MXGPs. Something like that. The team is something like that. It's Pauls Jonas. How's it going, Pauls?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks. And you guys?
Well, we're great.
Or it's just you. I don't see Adam. See Adam. So
I don't know why that is.
Oh.
now I see you. Yeah. Now you're there. I was thinking, Adam, is it Louis? Adam just is Louis here. Or both of you?
Adam is here. I was worried. Just telling me how great I am because I was the one who predicted this would happen.
Yeah, you've been on a Jonas jet for a while, so.
Well, ever since
time. Yeah, he's always believed in me, Adam. He's the one who always believed.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, how long did it take to get clean?
Oh, it's still like today. I came out to the shower, and then my wife said, "Yeah, just go again and wash your ears because it was still full with sand." So. Yeah, because like, you know, in Portugal and Águeda, the sand is quite strange. Like, it's like shiny or everything. That's like, I was laughing after the first moto, like I was full with mud, and then it looks like you just came back from holiday from Turkey with like a nice tan and everything.
Is it back to business as usual now? Like, does it feel like a normal week, or are you still emotional, getting lots of texts and feeling like special?
Yeah, for sure. I'm getting still lots of texts, but once I got home on Monday midday, it's just back to basics, back to normal. You know, it's like, it seems, yeah, nothing has changed. It's just I tick the box, won the GP, and life goes on. You focus on the next one.
Yeah, 2,163 days. I don't know why you waited so long. Probably should have done it a lot sooner, but it was nice for you to finally do it. I just wouldn't have waited so long if I was you.
Yeah, but you know, like, the good things come with time, so I just want to take time so it feels more special. No, but it's been a long, long time. Yeah, like I forgot how good it feels actually.
Adam,
Pauls, you know, was there a point where you thought, is this ever going to happen? I mean, you know, we see people like Adam C. and Cirillo retiring, and you know, there's questions over his career. He achieved a lot, but maybe didn't get some of the results he wanted in the premier class. And for you, you've been sort of MXGP Rookie of the Year. You've ridden for factory teams. You know, you're a popular rider. You're one of sort of the key characters in the MXGP gate. But was there a moment in the last year or two where you thought, oh man, you know, is that victory ever going to come?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, especially the last few years, going through all the injuries, all the struggles, and yeah, it felt like it's never gonna come, you know, like even just like to be on a podium, it's already like back in the day, MX2 days, it was like, yeah, if I finished third or second, I was not happy. And now it's like, oh, like, yeah, I wish I could get on podium. And the win was like something that, yeah, I didn't expect, you know, like, of course, when you see motocross, everything can happen. But still, like, nowadays, the level is really high. And to be honest, like, yeah, like Jeffrey, Tim, Jorge, even Romain, like, they're a step ahead of me at the moment, you know, so... needed the right circumstances, the right time, and just, yeah, being consistent, you know, like that was the main goal before the year, before the season. And of course, didn't expect to win the GP, actually, yeah, to be honest. And to be on the podium would be awesome, but yeah, I surprised myself also, so that's always good.
I feel like it's fair to say that old pools may have pushed too hard in the mud and crashed and cartwheeled and thrown away the GP win. So this is new pools, right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. You know, like in the mud, it's always like you need to be a little bit lucky. You know, it's a little gamble, but I always enjoy racing in the mud, riding in the mud. I practiced a lot in the mud when I was younger. So, yeah, I feel comfortable in those conditions. But still, like you said, old balls probably would have pushed too hard, too soon, crashed, and made too many mistakes. Because, like now, even riding the first moto, I came over the track and they said to the guys, like, oh, I cannot believe how slow I was going, you know, because in many places I just had to go in the first gear and feed out and then, oh, you know, like, so, yeah, the track was really difficult. So I think just like the new mentality helped at this point.
And Paul, thank you for two things. One, the celebration of jumping in the puddle. That was fantastic. You know, good to see. The second one, for actually doing a good podium celebration. You're still like pouring the champagne all over your head, which, you know, Lewis and I were talking about on the last podcast. And the third thing, you know, I wanted to ask you about was there a point where you thought, well, this is a bit sketchy, you know, should we really be running the GP in these conditions? Because I know it's a different type of motocross. It's a different type of challenge and racing, and you guys should have to face up to that. But then there is a point where you think, you know, is this really safe? Is this making much sense?
Yeah, I think like the podium celebration that made everything, you know, like now you can see it still in social media circulating around, you know, jumping in a mud. And actually like the pouring on champagne, that was your idea. You know, I remember which year was it? In 16, 17, I remember actually that we had a discussion that it's always boring, everyone just puts on the goggle and spray the champagne. So I said, just do something different, just do something nice. And I think since that time, always on the podium I do that, you know, I pour the champagne on and the pictures are always amazing and people love it. So that's PJ podium celebration. But yeah, like for the GP conditions, to be honest, like after the first moto, I said to the guys, I don't know if he can race, because like the track, it got so deep in a few spots, like before finish line, and then you could see before the pit lane, that kind of a scrub jump, the ruts got so deep that we nearly could go through in the last laps. So I said, and it was still pouring rain when we stopped. So I said, yeah, I cannot imagine that we will be able to race, but somehow they managed to pull the track together. And even the second moto, a few spots were a bit more difficult, but overall the track I think was better than the first one. Because in the first one, when you're racing, then yeah, the rain came and there was so much standing water on the track. But for second race was at least there was no water on the track. Of course it was super super muddy, super sticky, but still was quite good for racing.
Are you surprised how many people have reached out to you, like in your Instagram comments? Cincerello's in there, Jason Anderson's in there, like you are, it turns out, quite a big superstar around the world.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Like, you know, I'm a big fan of all of those guys. You know, I watch Supercross and AMA like every weekend, and even like the guys from the GPs, you know, in the comments and stuff. It's nice to see, you know, like I opened the comments, I think on Sunday night, I was like, oh, that made even more special than being on the podium, you know, like you say, AC and then Barshek comment, and yeah, everyone, it's pretty cool.
Adam?
Paul's one of the first people we saw on the TV feed to congratulate you was Stefan Everts. I know you've sort of worked a lot with Harry and Mark DeRuva in the past. How's that sort of collaboration working with, you know, for you? I mean, what kind of stuff are you guys doing together? How does it benefit you?
Yeah, actually, I started working with Stefan, I think last year when I had a thumb injury. I was just sitting at home and I said, like, yeah, something's not working. I need to change something. So I sent message. I actually had a meeting with Mark and I said, yeah, I think we need to do something. Like, it's not working together, like not really working together, but I just need to do something different. I need to be on my own. And even haven't reached out to anyone. I said, I just need to be on my own. I need to do something different because I felt what I was doing was not working. So I was not happy with how I felt and how everything was going. So I had to make a switch. And then I heard not rumors, but I heard some things going around, like that Liam and Stefan, they are working together, but like that Liam want to be a little bit more on his own and Stefan just will have a little bit more free time. So I just reached out to Stefan, had the meeting with him, and I said, like, yeah, I would be happy to help you just to get back to the old level. And it started working really well. Now, in the winter time, I also spent a lot of time in Portugal together with Stefan and Liam. So we have actually the same also physical trainer, Jens Hendricks. So we do some gym work together. We ride a lot together. And with Stefan, he's just, I would say, he helps a lot mentally, you know, just to how to prepare mentally, make the riding program, and just to support in the days when it's difficult, gives the right advice in the right time. And like, you know, we worked together in 2015, and that was my rookie year in MX2 class, and I almost won the title that year. I finished second, so I knew that it was working before. So I said, let's give it a shot. And I think Stefan is also enjoying working with me because, you know, if he tells me to do something, I will do it. So it was nice to see that he was so emotional and so happy also. Actually, it was nice. You know, Liam went 1-1, I won the GP. So it was a good day for Stefan and also for me, you know, like. Like I said, we spent a lot of time together with Liam in the winter time. So also for me, it's like I tried to give him some advice, you know, from my side, and he helps me with some things. So yeah, it was nice.
Has Stefan changed a lot since 2015, or is his like way of working with you, the what things he says, is it exactly the same?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, it has changed a bit because, you know, it's almost 10 years later, so I'm grown up a little bit more and. But still, it's old good Stefan. We can have some fun together and make jokes and everything. So it's quite good, you know, because like, you know, before and even like now, I have so much respect for Stefan. So sometimes it feels like, yeah, it doesn't feel real that he's helping me and we are like close and like really good friends. I can talk about everything with him and he's a 10-time world champ, you know, in my opinion, the best I've ever done it like in Europe. So it's pretty special.
Adam?
Paul's, how has the physical sort of toll of the injuries over the last few years? I mean, do you feel yourself kind of older than you are? Is it sometimes hard to get, you know, because you've always been a really hard worker. And I think that's why the likes of Stefan and Harry respect you and want to work with you, even Mark as well. I mean, Mark, I think, holds you up as an example to some of the younger riders he's had. You know, but has it been tough, you know, in the last sort of 18 months to keep the same sort of level that you want to do?
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, I always say that I'm getting old, you know, like just like in the mornings or in the evenings, you wake up, like I can feel that the back injury, what I had, okay, like the thumb, that's not so much like small things. But for sure, after I'm done racing, a few years later, I will need to go on the doctor's table to cut open and put some new discs in and fix my back because now also it's quite often that in the evening I'm like, yeah, I need to go to the bed because my back is still feeling like old man. But overall, just from a training standpoint, no, I'm still all in. I'm still all in. They still need to push the brakes on me sometimes.
Real talk now. I want you to be honest. Enough fluff. For all of the difficulties, all of the injuries, all of the struggles, was there a time where you were like, I can't do this? Like, this is out. This is gone. It's not working out for me. I think I need to walk away. Was there ever a time where you got that down in the dumps?
Yeah, for sure. Like, some, like, obviously, like, was really lucky, you know, like not lucky, but just from some point, like that, yeah, this the team standing, like team was there to support me and to take me in a team and give me a new chance, new opportunity, because for sure, like if there wouldn't be those people around, I would stop, I think, with the racing already, because it's tough, you know, like you know, like last few years with the injuries and everything and not getting the results you want, you know, I always said, like, if I cannot battle for top five or whatever, like, why I'm doing it, you know, like, okay, you're getting paid some money, but in the end, like, you're not racing because of the money. Of course, it's nice to get a nice paycheck end of the month, but it's a passion. It's just what you love to do, and I want to battle up front, not for P10. And because that's those days, it's just tough to get out in the morning to do the training if you're just struggling and don't want to race, you know. I have been through the times when I just said to the mechanic, we went riding, I did a few laps, I said, no, we go home, I'm not having fun, I'm not enjoying it, like, yeah, why I'm doing it, you know. So there have been some tough times, but now, yeah, since, let's say, last year was difficult, now since this off season, I'm enjoying riding and racing again, so back to business.
Do you remember Uddevalla 2022? Because that was definitely the worst I ever saw you.
Uddevalla 2022, Sardinia last year, 2023. That was also like that's one of the days when, like, still my wife says, she said, like, yeah, that was one of the worst racing days of my life, what she said, like, because after that race I said to her, if it continues like this, I'm done, it doesn't make sense, I'm not enjoying this, it's not working. But still, somehow next morning you wake up and like, let's try again, maybe it's gonna work.
This must have given you like a boost again as well, because now, like, I feel like this is almost the start of the second part of your career. Like this, I feel like you've got so much time in front of you again, so much potential to reach the level that you should be at in MXGP. Like this must be like the kickstart to go again.
I hope so. Just like I said, overall, this year I've enjoyed practicing, riding during the week and everything. Because for me, it has never been a problem, let's say, to go for a 3-hour bike ride or do heavy physical training. But sometimes it's just that I haven't enjoyed riding a bike somehow. And I said also to the people around, I said, like, how is that possible? Like, normally, just like in motocross, the best part is riding your bike. But if I'm not enjoying that, why am I doing it? So now this year, I've enjoyed it. And yeah, when you win the GP and have the good results, just, of course, it gives an extra boost. And like overall, this year has started really good. Yeah, my Arco wasn't the best race for me, but still, like, everyone's like, oh yeah, what happened? I said, yeah, that was my best in that day. So just keep going. And
Adam?
I think my prominent Paul's memory was maybe 2019. I came to the, your home GP in Kegums, walked into the paddock. And I think it was that year where you'd injured your back. I saw you in the paddock and you're wearing this support for your torso. You couldn't move your neck. You're in this huge brace and, you still managed to smile and say hello. But I was thinking, you know, look at the state of him. I mean, you know, this is a crying shame as well, being in Kegums where you were just this revered hero. And I've always sort of spoken about how MXGP go into these places like Latvia and, you know, giving this sort of inspiration to young kids who never really get a chance to come to maybe say France or Germany or Spain or Italy to see Grand Prix. And you're like an example, Paul, of somebody who gets, sort of invigorated by Grand Prix racing and wants to make their way to the top. So it was a bit of a shame seeing you in that state that day. And, you still need to win your home GP. This is something, you know, forget championships, anything like that. Just win the home GP. That's got to be the big one.
Yeah, for sure. But that was in 2020. Yeah, that was in the COVID
2020.
Year.
2020. Oh, COVID. With, right.
Yeah,
okay.
With a back injury. And then there were three GPs in Latvia. I remember it was a triple header and I wasn't able to race. So yeah, that was for sure tough. But yeah, that's part of the sport sometimes. And like you said, I still haven't won my home GP. I just... yeah, of course, that's a goal. That's still one of the big goals, but it's never coming easy. I've been second a few times, but close to winning, but not close enough. So I think that's probably also one of the greatest feelings what you can get in the racing.
I've got one more for you before we let you go back to your many messages. Do you feel like you get the respect that you deserve? Because I feel like people forget you're a world champion, you're a multi-time GP winner, you're now a GP winner in both classes. I feel like sometimes people need a reminder of who Paul Jonas is. Do you feel similar?
Yeah, I don't know. Like even myself, like sometimes I forget that I'm a world champion in MX2 because it's been so long time ago that everyone has the goldfish memory, you know, like they just remember the last race and that's it. So now this week I'm going to be the king. We'll see who will be the king after the next weekend. But no, I think still like overall, when you walk around in the GP paddock, I think people still have respect for me, and yeah, they know what I've done. The people have been in paddock for a while, and yeah, let's be honest, in MXGP I haven't shown the best results overall. I've been fast, like you said, fast and crashy, and this year I'm slower but more consistent, so hopefully this will help people to remember how good they can be.
Well, I'm gonna let you go with this very important speech that normally you'd have to pay for, but I'm gonna give it to you for free. This isn't the end. You're going to win again, probably this year, but if not, next year, whatever. You need to believe in yourself. Forget everything that happened in the last 7 years. This is it now. Like, fresh start. You're a winner. You should be on the podium every week. You should be in that mix. It doesn't matter that you're not on a full factory team. That's wrong. The factory teams know that you're that good. Just believe and take this forward. That's my word of advice as your fairy godmother. Oh.
Thank you, Lewis. That's a therapy from Lewis session. Yeah.
Yes. Do you feel like you're good at that?
You need to open like a stand at the track, you know, like big therapy with Lewis and give the speeches. Oh, you're good at that. Thank you, Lewis. Thank you.
He can't even pronounce your team name correctly. So just listen to the 10 times world champion and I think you'll be in better shape.
No, that's wrong.
It's not the easiest one. Like nowadays, the team names are quite long and complicated. So,
little secret people don't know: before Paul's messaged Stefan, he actually messaged me and said, "Will you train me?" And I said, "No, Paul, I'm not available." So then he was like, "Okay, I'll go to Stefan."
True story. True story.
Yes, true story. It happened. Okay. Well, thank you, Paul. Well done. And I can't wait to see you back on the podium soon. We're now going to talk shit about you on the podcast as soon as you turn off. But
that's just normal.
Thanks for joining us.
That's what the journalists do. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Right, see you, mate.
See you, Paul.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, Adam, was that emotional enough for you, or how do you feel about that?
Yeah, it was great. It's always good to hear from Paul. Like you said, you know, I've sort of... like you said as well, we've been sort of there all the way through his career, so it's just long overdue recognition and credit. Your inspirational speech at the end there just left me a bit lost for words, but I wanted to make a plea to him to stay healthy, stay on the bike, you know, have the same sort of goals Jeffrey Herlings this year and make it to the end of the season.
Yeah, like genuinely, like I consider Paul's a good friend, like away from the media. I genuinely consider him a friend, someone who I can call on if I need help or whatever. And I've had conversations with him where he has been like looking at the bigger picture, questioning stuff. And I'm always like, this is it. Like this was always there. I never kind of lost. It was obvious. Like even 2022, he was so upset in 2022. The bike wasn't working for him. It just wasn't a good situation happiness wise. But there were still glimpses of it there, like Argentina qualifying race, practice times. It was still there. It just needed the right situation to manifest, I guess.
Okay, so I've got a hypothetical for you. It's towards the end of the season. Paul Jonas is vying for the top three in the world championship, needs a result. He's going into the last few corners, almost level with Jeremy Sewer, who's chasing his first victory overall for Kawasaki, and Ben Watson, who's in the midst of like vying for his first podium finish with a beater. I doubt you'd still be on your chair, but you know, who would you want to do well in that situation?
You're a horrible man, Adam. You are a horrible, horrible man. That's an attack.
Okay. Too difficult. Too difficult.
I've never been in that situation. Luckily, I wasn't really friends with Paul's or Jeremy in 2017. Let's praise the Lord for that. Because if I was in the situation I'm in now in 2017, I probably would have been a bit stuck. But I will say this, and maybe you will agree with me, and maybe this will make me sound like a complete wet blanket and idiot, but
okay.
That was the most, like, genuinely watching him cross the finish, watching his final few laps, I like genuinely felt emotional. And I can't remember the last time that a win or a result has made me feel that, like, you know, emotional, I guess. Like, just because, again, we know the backstory. Everyone knows the backstory. It was a real feel-good win.
Aside from the fact that, you know, you have a personal relationship with somebody like Paul Jones, who's been around so long and is one of the good guys, the fact that it's just somebody new, somebody different winning, I think, you know, really adds to the show. You see that emotion. I mean, this is not another Jorge Prado win, who had been perfect this season up until that point. Not another win for Roman Faber or Jeffrey Herlings or Tim Geiger. This was, you know, something a little bit different. And just to sort of pull the podcast a little bit more onto sort of Portugal and away from Paul so much, you know, it's interesting to hear him say, Lewis, that the, you know, there were doubts over that second moto, because I can't remember such atrocious conditions for MXGP, maybe going back to like Indonesia 2017, perhaps, just in terms of the sort of the physical, technical and demands of the track and just the sheer lottery aspect of it.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Maybe I'm off base, but I cannot recall a mudder in recent years to this degree. Saturday in Erne in 2022 was muddy, but the race day was fine, so who cares?
Hashtag Erne.
Shouldn't have brought that up. Majora last year, Saturday was muddy, but the race was fairly okay, so who cares? Mantova 2019 was a mudder, but not to this degree. 2017 Russia, I think Sua said that 2017 Russia, this was similar to, but even that, I feel like there was one dry line, and, you know, so yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it is 2017 Indonesia.
Or going back even further than that, you could say 2009 Faenza, when riders were even struggling to get up the hill. I think Gautier Paulin took his first GP win that day in somewhat suspicious circumstances, because people were saying that he was actually cutting the track by veering away from the worst of the carnage up on the hill and like kind of getting away from the outskirts of the racing sort of trajectory. But also, I want to say 2010, perhaps, or in Belpuig in Spain. And I remember actually Giuseppe Longo, you know, the current president of Infront Motor Racing, we saw him the next day, I think, because we were, you know, traveling back home, or it might have been the next Grand Prix, but he was sort of laughing, saying it was, you know, one of the first times that MXGP had made it onto like CNN news, simply because the sight of the riders trying to get through the sheer waves of water and mud was just, you know, like comedy racing. It was like something out of one of those home video shows. It was slapstick, basically.
I honestly don't believe that Agueda was as bad as Belpuig or Faenza, though.
Belpuig.
I don't put it in that category. It was in bad mudder category, but Belpuig and Faenza is in like unbelievable chaos that can almost not be replicated with all the water in the world.
Yeah, I just remember Tommy Sell getting a whole shot in MX2, and he went into the first corner, and it was, I mean, he was doing his best Moses impression. He was just trying to part the water, and I think he went head first into it. It was brutal.
Yeah, insane. So Fevre was on the podium, which is actually quite surprising, because if there's a rider who you would maybe think would throw it away in these conditions, maybe Roman's high on the list. Tim won the first moto fairly convincingly, crashed in the first turn of the second moto. My point is this. I feel vindicated, again, because I feel like Agueda proved that Tim is the safe, reliable pair of hands, and I feel even more convinced of that now, because even with a crash in the second moto, he salvaged a podium. This is why Tim Geiser is a safe bet for the title, because he's a safe, reliable pair of hands. I don't even need to expand further. That is it. It's right there in front of us.
I don't know if I'm incorrect in this, but I think Agueda, certainly around sort of the first moto. I think the track crew did an amazing job trying to, you know, preserve things and keep the racing surface in some sort of semblance of decent shape for the beginning of the race day. But, you know, the ground there is slightly odd. I mean, Paul's was talking about sort of the shiny aspect of the sand, but it can get very sort of hard underneath as well. And I think, you know, Geiger sort of lost the rear end and crashed from a sort of hole shot position, I think, at the beginning of that second moto. But there were aspects of the track where, you know, it can be very hard packed. So I just wondered if, you know, if it was on sort of some of the jump takeoffs or certain corners that were higher up and the water was running down, then, you know, you could move from a situation where you were axle deep in ruts, just trying to get through, to suddenly going through something a lot more tacky and hard. So it was really, really tough. But yeah, good call on Febra. I mean, that was also, I mean, Liam Evans was sort of evoking some of the words of his dad in the press conference afterwards by saying you win championship on tough days. And I think this was a tough day for everybody. And Febra took sort of decent points.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that Febra didn't gain more ground in the championship. With Prado's bad day, I expected to open the points and Febra be 20 down, you know, in the picture. But I forget now, but I believe he's still 34, 38. 36, I don't know. I can't do math.
Well, is this something why like the that. MXGP point system works? I mean, Prado's been the standout rider so far in the first four Grand Prix of the year, but now he hasn't got the red plate anymore. And it just goes to show in one weekend, things can turn around quite viciously. You know, and when it comes to the world champion, I think Portugal's one of those weirdo races for him where they either go, it goes really well or really badly. I mean, like on his debut as a 16-year-old in 2017, he didn't finish one of the motos because it was really, really hot. I mean, he was still like a waif-like teenager. He didn't finish a race and he didn't start the second one. And it was big news on that day because it was the closest he had to a home GP. He's from Galicia, which is just above Portugal on the Iberian Peninsula. And of course, we go to his territory next for round six in the Grand Prix of Galicia. And so he had family, friends there. There was a lot of pressure for him. And yeah, he sort of wilted that day. I mean, he roared back in 2018 and 19. I think he won four motos in a row there in MX2. And, you know, I think he won a couple of motos in the MXGP. Of course, he won last year, the first moto. It was that strange 2023 tendency for Jorge where he would win the first race and then sort of, you know, take a top three in the second one. But then this was a complete reverse. It was like going back to 2017 in terms of the fortune that he had.
Yeah, and it's funny because this is almost a poster example for how recency bias operates in this sport, because ultimately, Agueda was a shit show. So really, we shouldn't put that much weight in it. And we should remember that Prado was unstoppable across four rounds. But instead, we're all losing our heads and going, is Prado the favourite? I think Tim's a favourite now, blah, 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 blah. And really, if we were sensible, we should say, yeah, that was bad, disregard it. What we know is that Prado was the best guy in normal conditions, so he'll be fine come this weekend. But we're not, none of us in the world are playing that game.
Yeah, you've got a couple of joker cards, haven't you, in a 20 race season, a 20 GP season. And that was one of them for Jorge. And you can't really have that many, especially if we're going to have a championship like 2021, fingers crossed.
Oh,
you know, look at Febra. I mean, a couple of motos that year where he would crash out of second or first or even third and then finish seventh or eighth. You know, those points ultimately cost him right when it counted.
Back to Tim quickly. It was weird that he wasn't on the podium. Giacomo Garibaldi took his spot. There was a rumor flying around the paddock that he was hurt, and obviously the podium celebration only fueled that. It seems he's fine. In fact, I'm completely certain that he is fine. I don't know what the reason was for him not climbing onto the podium, but I do believe he is okay. And your new MXGP championship leader by 14 points. So
yeah, or maybe he swallowed like 4 gallons of Portuguese mud. I mean, I thought, I thought the crowd attendance was pretty good. I mean, you saw the whole circuit surrounded with populated by umbrellas. But, you know, I think Agueda's been on the calendar for about 20 years now. 2004 was the first time it sort of really popped up and has been like a staple part of the championship. And like I said earlier, it either just tends to rain or be fantastic weather there, being right sort of on the Atlantic sort of seaboard, if you like. So it was, I thought it was pretty good by the fans. Good showing.
is this an accurate statement? I don't care about the points right now. I will give each of the riders, Fevre, Geyser, Prado, Herlings, 25% likeliness of winning the title each, because there's going to be another mudder. Someone will get injured. There will be another bike failure. Agata has almost opened my eyes to the fact that we're so early in this thing. They're all riding great now. Herlings is kind of back, I do believe. We'll get into that more in a minute. Tim has been great all year. Fevre has been great all year, I would say, with the exception of Sardinia. But that was kind of exterior circumstances. And Prado obviously been great. So I feel quite confident in saying that they're all equal. Anyone can win this. And let's see how this plays out.
I think that's a very balanced statement. But then I'll follow it up by asking you, who's your tip for the title? At this point.
Adam. Like.
I mean, I think I said Prado. We did the preview show and I said Prado this year. I'm still inclined to stick with that.
My gut feeling is, and again, like, I'm just going to get shit, but you know what? I've seen enough races to know this. I've seen enough races. I've spoken to enough people. I have an expert opinion, I'd like to think. My gut feeling is Herlings is turning a corner and this could become the Herlings show quite rapidly here coming up. I feel like this is the start. He may start chipping away for reasons I mentioned, bike problems, injuries, mudders. There's going to be opportunities for him to claw it back. Agata has fueled my Herlings hope for the title. And I know that's going to be an unpopular opinion. And I'm not saying that he's going to win it, certainly. But when you ask that question, my mind immediately jumps to the fact that I think he's turning a corner. And the excitement and the prospect of that is, got me frothing at the mouth a little bit.
But I don't think that's an unreasonable take. And I don't think it's down to any particular fandom, let's say. I think it's good. I think he's been building up. He's had the rib injury. He's had the technical DNF, which, you know, how many of those can you remember in since 2017 when he's been in the Premier class?
Well, I mean, there's the worth noting that the week before at the British Championship, his bike was smoking and let go after the finish line. So actually, it's twice in 2 weeks, which is really rare.
We have to find out perhaps if it's the same issue.
I think both races
looked electrical to me. Yeah,
both races were muddy, and a rider who competes against Herlings said that he was so hard on the clutch that they're surprised the bike didn't give up on lap one. So
right, okay. Yeah. But I mean, he is over 50 points behind Geyser now. It's almost one Grand Prix, which is a lot. And knowing Jeffrey, he'll be stressing about that. And he'll be talking about the points deficit and how many points he needs to make. But yeah, I think the speed and the composure for sure he showed in that second moto. I mean, that was his first moto victory since June 2023. That's a long, long time. And, I think it's a sign of a few more to come.
Do you read, and kind of jumping around a little bit here, but do you read anything into the fact that Pools and Standing Construct won a GP before HRC? Is that a story? Is that interesting? I feel like it's something to hang your hat on a little bit. Like, you were the first Honda team to win a GP in 2024, or is it irrelevant?
Well, just in the same way that we didn't want to discredit Pauls' victory, we also have to acknowledge that it was exceptional circumstances. And I think Geyser, rode brilliantly to win the first moto. I don't think it's something we can... I mean, if it was normal conditions and also he beat Tim, I think that's something, far more to hang your hat on. But it was a big result for the team as well. Let's not forget. I mean, we've been singing Pauls' praises and he's been on the show, but this is also sort of a complete... sort of vindication, there's that word again, for sort of like Wim and Tim Mathis and the whole of the crew there. And we've been sort of extolling the virtues of Standing Construct as a worthy satellite team for a good couple of years now, Lewis. So, and they've shown it again because they needed a year to get their hang of, to get their heads around the CRF machinery. And now they've done it. Jonas is fit. He's confident. He's happy. It's a shame what happened to Alberto Ferrato. And, the team are kind of revolving around one rider again. But, they're on a good way.
It's a worthwhile story. Standing's successful conversions. Koldenhoff, Max, Jonas now, Bogers, Monticelli even. Monticelli was irrelevant until he got on standing. Monticelli wasn't even a name that you considered worthwhile of speaking of. And then he got on standing
Valentin
and was suddenly...
Leo.
Yes. I'm trying to think before Koldenov. What were they? Yamaha with Wilvo, Honkov?
Suzuki at one point, I think.
Yeah. No, or did that never happen? Wasn't that a rumor that that was going to happen? And then for some reason it got shut down. I swear that was a thing. Like, standing is going to take over Suzuki, MX2, blah, 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 blah. And then for some reason in December, it was like, yeah, that's not happening. But maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, goodness.
They went from Yamaha. They've had a lot of brands. They went from Yamaha.
KTM. At first they were KTM. Then they went Yamaha.
And then they went, and then they had a year off. Then they came back as KTM. Then Husqvarna, then GasGas. No, then GasGas, then Husqvarna. Now Honda.
Because Koldenov won his first Grand Prix in MX2 for standing KTM. On a KTM at Matterley Basin.
Yeah.
I want to say 2013, perhaps, around that time.
Yeah, 2013. I think he went 4-3 or something. It wasn't, it was a weird day.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I feel like the Suzuki thing never came to fruition.
Yeah, okay. Maybe that
But you're right. It was like this is happening, and it just never did. Unless I'm wrong, which I'm now making myself look like an idiot. But yeah, it's a worthwhile story, and I'd like to see what they can do with Ben Watson. And I know Tim listens to this, so I'd like to see that, Tim.
There you go, Tim.
yeah, so are we happy to move on from the title contenders? Are we done with them?
We are.
Okay,
yeah.
Good job. Well done, everyone. 25% each, I'm an equal opportunist. I love you all, and I wish you all the best. If you could all tie for the championship at the end of the year, then that would just make me happy. Bogers, I want to give Bogers some credit. Late addition to the season, almost on the podium. Similar to taking out Pauls's bad years, if you could just remove all of the years that Bogers had to ride a Honda, his career is actually quite decorated. The Honda years, no matter the team, just obliterate his kind of overall perception. But I felt like it was quite impressive for him to almost be on the podium. And I've had this conversation with a few riders. I would fully bet all of my money on the fact that Fantic will re-sign him for next year, because Dutchman, it just works in every facet. And I feel like he's already done enough to kind of justify that. So
I think you still need to see a bit more. But again, it's one of those things where maybe the experience and the personality, the face fits inside the team, like you say, that could be a big thing. And that's why at one point, you know, he was testing for KTM. He was obviously a rider that works well with people, gives good feedback, and that counts for something, especially if you're kind of signed to be in that sort of number two role. But fourth place was a great finish. And we have to mention Cornelius Tondo as well, Lewis, top five. Best result in MXGP. I think it's only his second year in World Championship Racing. He was in MX2 last year. Was a sort of top five guy in EMX 250 European Championship Racing.
He was in EMX Open at one point.
Yeah. I mean, just a great result for the Norwegian. I mean, he sort of made the start, and finishing third, in the second moto was one of probably the surprising result of the season so far.
By the way, saying that Cornelius Tundel was in the EMX Open is the extent of my EMX Open knowledge. Like, that is
well,
it. I've just given you everything
well.
I have on EMX Open. On that topic, I received a text on Sunday from a professional rider that said, I can swear on this, who the fuck is Cornelius Tundel? So just that's how much this was a step up from where he's normally been.
But to be fair to him, was he? Is he 22, 23?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not. Yeah, he's on the way. I mean, give him some credit, and I'd like to see if he can sort of kick on from this and become a top 10 guy.
Well, speaking of riders who are on their way, Andrea Bonacorsi moved up from MX2 to MXGP. MX2 wasn't really going well. He was a bigger guy. MXGP team needed a rider, so there was a multitude of reasons why this just made sense. Sixth overall on his debut, a great result. We knew he was capable on a 450 from the Nations last year. But let me ask you this. If you're Yamaha and you've got a decision to make at the end of the year now between Vlaanderen and Bonacorsi, Vlaanderen will almost certainly have the better results this year, etc., etc. But could you see Yamaha backing their young upstart who they've been with since EMX 250 and wanting to just invest in that to see if it could work out a la Fevre, Gertz, Renault, etc., etc.?
If it is that sort of approach where they're taking their Renault, Gertz, fast track, then yes. If it's the Watson approach where they just want to tack another rider on and see what happens, then no. And Bonacorsi, like you say, Lewis, has been sort of part of the Yamaha system. So, strange conditions in Portugal, but six overall was decent stuff. So fair play.
He's good on a 450. This also, He may not be that high, but he will be ninth. He's in the remit of this. Speaking of Ben, let's jump to that because I've got a game to play with you.
I think we have to point out, with Kevin Haugmo finishing seventh, and Alvin Uslan taking a top 10 finish in 10th, just behind Jeffrey Herlings, of course, who had that DNF and then won the second moto. I mean, that's three riders sort of from Northern Europe, that kind of Scandinavian area, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. That's just never happens in MXGP.
It's coming. That part of the world is going to take over. I cannot wait for 5 years' time when we're sat on this podcast and going, who's going to win the nations, the USA, Norway, or Sweden? Because that is where it's going. I swear. I literally swear. I feel like that, maybe not 5 years, give it 15. Is Chase Sexton going to be able to beat Cornelius Tindall? Let's discuss that matchup. But speaking of Haugmo, let me revisit a question I gave to you last time or the time before. Is Haugmo good enough for factory teams to start taking notice? Like, is this now really turning into something, or is it still too early?
Youth is on his side, I would say, compared to some of the older riders. Again, I think you have question marks over the fates of people like Brian Bogers, Calvin Verlandren, maybe Glenn Coldenhoff, Valentin Guillot. I mean, I know we're not talking strict factory status there. Roman Febre as well. I mean, we were linking him heavily with Triumph. Jorge Prado is going to be a rider that jumps out. So that would, in theory, make a seat at Gas available. But then you would have to plug in somebody like Andrea Adamo there. So, he's kind of in that bracket with Verlandren, isn't he? Where he's sort of snapping at the heels of somebody to give him a chance. If he got the factory ride, Lewis, you wouldn't be thinking, well, where did that come from? I mean, I think he's sort of proving his chops in the premier class at the moment.
Yeah, and to be clear, if he had got a factory ride for this year, I would have been thinking, where did that come from? But through five rounds, he has done enough to justify it, I do believe. Sua is a rider from Switzerland.
Muddy.
What was that?
He was muddy.
Yes, and I got a text from someone else saying, oh, Sua just has little legs. But he won Russia. Did he lap the field in Russia, 2017? I feel like he lapped the field. Or no, he definitely lapped up to, like, hold on.
What, a 250 Suzuki?
Yeah. Or am I not, have I just right. completely misremembered?
Well, the bike popped in the first moto, right? I mean, he DNF'd. And then where did he finish? Second moto to fourth, fifth. Okay. Jeremy's ridden in the mud enough of his time being brought up in Switzerland.
Russia, 2017, second moto. Sua lapped everyone except for second place, which was Brian Bogers.
Wow, okay. There's not many riders who've done that, you know. Jeffrey Herlings, perhaps, in the stand at Lierop.
Well, that's Sua for you. There will be a Saturdays with Sua when I go to a GP for the first time. Watch this space, I guess.
So this is going to be a Saturday with Sua, you mean?
Yes.
Which, can't go plural on the Saturdays when there's only one.
Yeah, no, there'll be another one, I'd imagine, like the Nations, maybe. right. Can I now play the Ben Watson game with you?
Yes, play the Ben Watson game.
Let's talk about how good he was. Seventh in the first moto. Honestly, I tuned into the second moto expecting a Ben podium. He's a good mud rider. I tuned into the second moto thinking, this is the time, Ben. Like, this is it. It's there for you. And you know what? Actually, speaking of Sua, sent me a very nice message on Sunday night purely to tell me Ben was riding really well and he flew past me in the first moto because he knew that would mean a lot to me. And it did.
While he was still on the bike?
Yes, yes.
Just to clarify.
So, that was another good showing from Ben. Crash and bike problem in the second moto. But the game. So we've both dabbled in PRs throughout our lifetime. Sometimes you have to fabricate the rider quote if they don't give you enough or whatever, which leads us to our new game. Did the rider really say this? Quote begins, "At the start of the heat, I almost had to stop to put the tear-out lenses of my glasses back in place. Slowly, I climbed back up to 11th, but unfortunately, I made a small mistake in which I slightly damaged the bike and could not finish as expected. I'm so sorry for ending the weekend like this, but let's take the positive aspects of the first race." Did Ben Watson really say that? Adam, over to you.
Maybe 30-40% of that, I would say.
Okay, let's zero in then. Did Ben Watson say, "I almost had to stop to put the tear-out lenses of my glasses back in place"?
Now, this is what happens though, is when you have maybe a non-native English speaker writing a press release and facilitating Google Translate. So, but, you know, we shouldn't be too picky. I mean, there was a quote. Sometimes you just don't get them. And for the record, I don't think I've ever fabricated a rider quote.
I have a lot. But also because, even though you must have been in, I was in a situation where the rider just said, "I can't be bothered. Can you just do it every week?" So I just did.
No, because, you know, it's their fucking job. I mean, you know, you've been paid money to race a motorcycle. It's your duty as well to give a 30-second quote to a press person or a PR who then sends it on to you after the race. It's not that difficult. And I've been waiting more than 30 minutes to speak to Michael Pichon or Clément de Sales. You know, very politely, sort of very courteously, you know, "I want your feedback on the race." And even if it's a terrible quote that maybe you have to embellish a little bit, you know, the root of it is still their thoughts. And if they don't want to say anything, then it's empty. You know, I think that's, you know, it becomes a reflection on them.
Well, to finish this game,
I ruined your game. Go on.
I had an absolutely brilliant strategy for this. So I'm in a group chat with Ben. And I put the quote in there and put, "Can you imagine the idiot rider that said this?" And there was a guessing game, who said it, lots of names flying around. And then I poked, someone said in the group chat, "I can't think of a rider who wears glasses." And I said, "Me neither. Who's the idiot?" And it was Ben. It was great, really. Because I knew it wasn't him. It obviously isn't, like... Ben has started wearing glasses since I last saw him. And I was just about to really... take the piss, but yeah, fun times. Game.
Well, you know that round six is the Grand Prix of Galicia next weekend, right? So the Ben Watson quote now in the press release is going to be this thing of great beauty and an articulate statement on the very essence of the Grand Prix and his performance.
Well, let's hope that the quote is better than it has been. Prado, just to clarify, he's a terrible mud rider, so this really isn't that much of a surprise. I know Americans will struggle with that because he won the heat race in San Francisco, but honestly, he is a terrible mud rider. He's too calculated. He's too precise for mud, I feel. Maybe terrible is too far, but he's too calculated, too precise, too much of a thinker for mud, where you just have to close your mind and hold the throttle wide open.
I would disagree with that. I would say it was a bad day for him.
Okay.
You know, because you've seen him in very slick conditions, and a rider of his technical ability doesn't drop the ball like that very often.
Okay. Well, Adam's just completely shit on me there.
but also, well, you know, let's, can we just point out the fact that the next Grand Prix is only like 3 hours north of Agadir. So it's very possible that the same weather scenario pops up because it's so changeable on that sort of side of Europe. But having said that, I can see the forecast. I'm going to Le Mans in northern France, which is, you know, obviously further north, but sort of right again close to sort of the Atlantic area, and gets a bit stormy as well. And the forecast is supposed to be amazing for next weekend, you know, like sort of 25 degrees. I'm not sure what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's going to be a fine weekend of weather for MotoGP. So I would assume it's going to be pretty decent as well in northern Spain.
You may wonder why I've not done a single ad read so far in this podcast, and I too am wondering that myself. But the reason is because I'm struggling to comprehend the sheer brilliance of the Polisport Unbreakable Levers, and only now, an hour in, do I feel comfortable and steady enough to actually speak of the sheer brilliance that is the Polysport Unbreakable Levers. Do you remember all of the crashes and falls that you had and the levers that you destroyed because of that? Well, that's no longer a problem. Polysport released the Pivot Unbreakable Levers, a lever set that never breaks. Thank you to Polysport, EVS, and All Balls Racing. I'm glad I got to that point, because honestly, I wasn't sure if I would ever feel comfortable enough to speak of the sheer brilliance, but I managed to buck up my ideas.
And Lewis, you deserve a bonus from Polysport for that, I think.
Well, considering I forgot to do it, I feel like I really saved that quite well. Well done to everyone in MXGP. We are proud of all of you. You all did very well. If you could all win, I would like that very much. But unfortunately, there can only be one winner. And the one winner in MX2 was Liam Evertz. And is this 2005 Agata, or is this 2024? We don't know. It's very blurred lines there. Of course, referencing the fact that Stefan won Agata in the mud in 2005. But Liam was great, clearly the best rider. Let's jump to this discussion. He is 98, 08, 18, 28, 38. He is 48 points down in the championship. He missed the first round. Is Liam Evertz going to be world champion?
Ooh, will he be? Well, he's definitely in the fight, isn't he? But will he be world champion? That's a question.
Okay, better question. Is he Kaida Wolf's biggest competitor?
Yes. Yes, he is. Because your mate Simon, who you embraced and then cast off, you know, gave him the cold shoulder. You know, it's just been a little bit Simonish, really, so far this year. Kaida Wolf, as we know, incredibly strong. Lucas Koonen, just being too Lucas Koonen-y. I think, you know, Liam Evertz has got everything that he needs right behind him. And to be honest, that performance in Portugal, he would have been sleeping in his motorhome at this track, hearing the rain coming down, thinking, right, okay, what do I need to do tomorrow? I know, I need to get two whole shots, get out there, be the cleanest guy on the track, and then just keep the bike on two wheels. I mean, he almost blew it in the second moto by dropping it, but managed to pick up and had a ridiculous advantage of like 50 seconds or something. But, you know, he did everything that he needed to do in those conditions, and it was tailor-made for a rider of his, just his maturity and his measured approach. And, you know, he has a perfect shining example in his day-to-day life of someone who rode exactly as fast as he needed to be to get the job done. And, you know, that was another sort of showcase, I think, by Liam Evertz-Lewis. That's two in a row now, right? I mean, do you think he's in it?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, I think I said that he was in it before round two. I think he's that good. This was an opinion. I now believe it's fact. He's the best rider, MX2 rider, on Red Bull KTM Factory Racing. Are you familiar with the film Toy Story?
Yes.
You know how Woody was the favorite toy, and then Buzz Lightyear came along?
Yes.
Simon is Woody. Liam is Buzz. So I'm now pushed Woody to the side. Woody's depressed, or whatever the story of the film is, and I'm now running around with Buzz Lightyear in my hand, a la Liam Evertz, and, like, this is my new favourite toy, he can fly, he can speak, like, it's all amazing. That's basically where I'm
at. So, who's poor Wheezy the Penguin, who's up on the shelf and been forgotten about and is all dusty?
So, this is a great game. I'm really invested in this, let me think.
I always felt sorry for Wheezy.
I need a good answer for this. But you could argue the way that MX2 has gone, that's Adamo.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, he's still been there. I mean, I thought, you know, he, after sort of his tribulations of late, then what did he finish? 7-5 or something in the motos? That was, I think he said it afterwards. And if you were talking about rider quotes, I think Adamo offers some of the best sort of insight. Considering he's doing it in a second language as well. He just said, you know, it was one of those races where you can win a lot or lose a lot. And we did neither today. And, you know, it was pretty balanced. Typical of him, really. But that's, if he gets back on that kind of consistent train of results that he started making last year, then he's going to sort of like go up the standings as well, Lewis. But yeah, Kaida Wolf, I think we have to look at him and sort of, you know, wonder sort of what happened there. Was that sort of a flash of the erratic Kai that's popped up in the last two seasons, or just bad luck and it was like a Prado-esque blip?
I go the opposite way. I'm impressed with Kai because I feel like it could have gone so much worse. I feel like, I can't remember exactly, but I feel like he was certainly in worst positions in each moto. So for him to salvage what he did and not throw it away in a spectacular fashion was kind of like, and not give up even, because I feel like in the past, maybe he would have been a bit like, fuck this. I'm impressed that he salvaged what he could. Yeah, I think that's where I'm at.
There were, just to be more general about MX2, 27 riders. Didn't seem that many, really.
Is that not always the case in Portugal? I feel like it's so far south that for riders from France and Belgium and England, well, not that there's any riders in England, I feel like it's too far for them to go. I feel like it's always low on numbers.
Yeah, but when it's paired up quite sensibly with the Galician Grand Prix, I mean, that's two races, two weekends, the whole sort of circus stays in that part of Europe. I thought it's quite a sensible way to do it, really. So it was a bit surprising to see those numbers. Thoughts also for Camden McLennan. I think he broke his leg, right? His fibula,
yeah,
or something.
Fibula.
Yeah. So, you know, thoughts for him and for the Triumph guys. That was a bit of bad luck as well. But yeah, I mean, just another frenetic day in MX2. But, you know, Evertz has really just excelled since he's come back from that thumb injury.
I would like to revisit a previous topic, which was the most fun I've ever had in my life. Lucas Kuhn and his Mr. Potato Head, because he can fall apart at any moment.
Well, I mean, rebuild himself in different forms.
Yes, that is spot on. If you have any strong feelings about which Toy Story character is a rider, feel free to reach out and we'll be more than happy to take those suggestions. If you have more sensible comments, we'll also accept those. A tip and a hat to Hutton Metal, double MX2 podium, Elsinger's first podium of his MX2 career. It's been a tough road for him, so I feel like, well, his elation was clear. And Beniston, I don't know how I feel about Beniston. Beniston is wheezy. Like, I don't know.
No, Beniston's a wheezy. Wheezy's forgotten and neglected, and Beniston's not quite that. I mean, Beniston, I think, could be the dark horse in this team.
No. No,
yeah, he'll be the rider we don't talk about. And then suddenly by round 14, he's only 20 points away from the lead.
Okay, well, this is now going to make my question redundant, but I had it on the docket anyway. Do Austria sweep the GP wins in MX2 this year?
No, Yamaha's going to get a couple.
Okay, and it would have to be Beniston, because I don't believe that Elsinger will get one.
Well, you never know. I mean, it could be a day in the sand where just a couple of people fall down and he's competitive. Strong rider is Elsinger.
A couple of quick notes while it's on my mind. You mentioned earlier the Fevre to Triumph rumor, and you also mentioned McLellan and Triumph. I keep hearing festerings that the Triumph 450 is not going to be ready for next year.
Now, oh, wow. Okay.
Maybe it won't be ready, but the factory team will have one. It's my knowledge that currently the factory team do not have one in their possession. I don't know if you want to read too much into that. I don't know if that's actually bad or not, but I hear they don't. So yeah, that could be a major player in the silly season game. And on a semi-related note, I hear that Ice One will have a MX2 rider next year.
On Kawasaki's.
Yes, so, I mean, because obviously...
What FMH. Is going on with Kawasaki? Because they have a tremendous heritage in something like World Superbike. And now they're instead KHI, Kawasaki Heavy Industries, are now going to be pushing the Bimota brand in that championship. So the green bikes are effectively disappearing. So, you know, a Kawasaki on the way to doing a Suzuki. This is something we have to sort of watch out. I could be completely off point, and I apologize to the likes of sort of Steve Guttridge and Kawasaki Motor Europe, who are probably trying to stitch together deals and arrangements for 2025 and beyond. But I hope, you know, that is the situation, and, you know, we're still going to see a lot of green in MXGP.
I have long been of the opinion that Kawasaki was going that way, and it's Fevre's success which has kind of stalled it. I feel like if Fevre wasn't doing as well as he did, it would be a very, or has is doing, it would be a very different story with Kawasaki. The introduction of Ice One as well saved it, because Ice One may be more willing to part with their own money, especially after they were shunned from Husqvarna. I think that helped for motivation because it was like, okay, we have an equal partner here. But obviously, yeah. F and H are still on Kawasaki's, but they are all black with no word of Kawasaki on them at all. So although that is a Kawasaki, as far as the green Kawasaki, they have zero representation in MX2 at the moment.
I think the strength of the partnership with Ice One and whatever they bring or invest into the Kawasaki program is key. If they suddenly decide to change brand to someone else, then I think there's a big question mark. But also, don't forget the Dixon Racing team as well. Kawasaki as well. I mean, Steve Dixon, of course, I'm not too sure on his engineering priorities or potential now, but he was an interesting partner for the factory because he was just looking into honing the 250, the KX250F, how it could be improved, was really kind of taking an experimental note with the motorcycle to make it more competitive. And, I know that was of great interest to the Japanese in the past. So if it's still the same sort of thing, I mean, Steve's focused quite a bit in recent years on fielding sort of the likes of Courtney Duncan and winning the Women's World Championship. If that's still the situation, then, that's another part of sort of the Kawasaki fabric. But yeah, Lewis, I mean, that's a good scoop. I haven't really heard about the 450 not being ready because that would really mess things up for Triumph in terms of, signing Roman Federer and getting that whole side of the operation going. And maybe Federer signs another 1-year deal and stays with Ice One and on the KX450F and waits for Triumph a bit longer.
There's some scuttlebutt in the American paddock as well that Triumph haven't produced enough bikes to meet the homologation rule. So it seems to be quite a lot of Triumph.
Yeah. But doesn't that only need to be like 500 units or something? I mean, that's sort of the KTM factory edition, which, the Austrians do enable sort of the likes of Chase Sexton to race Supercross. Mm. I don't think that there's that many units they produce to have that.
Did we ever discuss my feelings on the Adamo edition?
No.
I don't know who's buying.
Oh, yes, no, you did. I think you said it wasn't deserved.
That sounds really harsh.
He's a world champion. How's it not deserved?
I don't know if I said that. I hope I didn't, because it's really harsh. I just don't know who's going out and buying an Adamo edition.
Maybe 50 or 60 Italians?
True. I mean, I guess it's not like you put your own numbers on it and it's just a factory edition bike. It's not an Adamo edition anymore. But still, like, I just can't imagine someone being like, I really want the Adamo edition. And at risk now of sounding like I'm piling on, and I don't even know if I want to approach this subject, if this doesn't get better, is this a Steve Ramon style world title defense and outlook on the original world title?
It will get better.
Okay. How better?
Well, I mean, the guy's going to be going for GP wins. I mean, I don't think they were quite ready. Obviously had some setup issues pre-season. Those seem to have improved. And Adamo is just too smart of a rider, as I was alluding to earlier. So I think he's going to be back in the trophies soon. And Evans, of course, has the package sorted out. Rebel KTM are just too good to be able to, not let that fail. And I mean, Sascha Kuenen as well has remarkable speed and can start, probably better than most of the riders in the gate, Lewis. But, he's on the way. I saw that the Kuenen brothers were in Austria recently. I mean, there was a big group photo, I think, was sort of Pit Beyer and Robert Jonas and some of the senior management. So I wonder if they were there sort of inking a new deal, perhaps, or just making a visit to the factory. But it's clear that despite some of the unpredictable form of the twins, they are still very much highly rated by Austria. And let's see if they come over to the US. But on that subject of the US, we talked in the last podcast and you seemed quite confident that Eli Tomac might pop over for some MXGPs, and that's now been scuttled. So was your source or was your feeling way off base, or was it closer to happening than everyone thinks?
Okay, first of all, you say quite confident. I literally used the word maybe, potentially, possibly, like 17 times. So I don't feel like that radiated confidence. No, it is
confident
my understanding.
Enough to say it.
It is my understanding, and actually, no, it's not my understanding. This was the situation. Around the time of 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, basically, Eli had options put in front of him. He race outdoors, You race some outdoors and some GPs. You race all of the GPs in the second half of the season. Pick one. And obviously, choosing outdoors scuppers the GP element. I do plan on asking Eli about this.
Oh.
No? Okay. I do not plan on asking Eli about this. Oh,
please film it. Please film it.
How is that bad? Like, I don't understand. Like, hey, buddy. Congrats on locking in your pro motocross deal. I heard from a good source that you were going to potentially entertaining the idea of doing some GPs. Tell me about that.
Have you interviewed him since he looked like he wanted to eat part of your brain with a spoon?
Yes, and it was all going well. And then in true Lewis fashion, I didn't find the limit and I made a joke. And that kind of killed it a little bit.
Right, okay. Please ask him. Please film it. I think it will break the internet.
But I feel like that's a perfectly sound, reasonable question.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it is completely, especially if there's truth to the matter and he was wearing it up.
Okay, you've really scared me. Maybe my brain isn't made for this, because I don't understand how this could go bad.
No, on your checklist of jobs and the final round of Supercrosses, if you've not got enough to do anyway, you have to corner Eli and say, how close were you to doing some MXGP? Come on, tell me the truth. You know, it might be a bit of an icebreaker where he's like, oh, Lewis, you're so funny. You know, what a question that is. Yeah, let's talk about it, you know?
The problem is, because of my accent, I believe that people like Eli, as in people who don't know me very well, just are like, oh, here he is pushing the MXGP agenda. Like, oh, Eli, who do you think's the fastest continent? Like, you know, stuff like that is what I worry that people think that's what I'm there for. But
that's too much paranoia, because also it's topical if, you know, we've been chatting about it and this is the second podcast we brought it up. So there, you know, the whole smoke without fire kind of cliche you want to throw at it. I think it's, you know, if there was ever a conversation he's had with someone at Yamaha about doing MXGPs, then he knows, you know, it's not a really random left field, oh, is Europe better than the US kind of question. But on that subject, I have a question for you, because you've been in sort of the US for quite some time now covering Supercross. Which of the current rider group in the AMA would realistically adapt well and do a Zach Osborne in MXGP?
Jet and Hunter are off the table, I guess.
Yes, but on that note, I mean, Jet Lawrence is on the verge of winning everything in the US before he can buy a beer in that country. So what does he do next? I mean, he could sort of go into the history books by being MXGP world champion as well, but to be 20 years old and have won everything in the US, you know, what's he going to do? Is he going to look at McGrath's record and think, right, I'm just going to crack on? Or does he think, right, okay, guys, I've done everything, I'm made for life. You know, where's the next challenge?
Yeah, I do wonder that with like motivation, because if I put myself in that position, I feel like I would think exactly that. I wouldn't be able to just get myself up and going purely for the sake of doing the job, you know? Like, I need that lofty goal. I need that lofty goal to chase.
Well, there's a massive, of course, we're ignoring the lifestyle change and, you know, the financial aspect. I mean, he can make more money, I think, in two or three main event wins in 450 Supercross than he would in a year racing in MXGP, or he would like bust the barrier in terms of earnings if he came over and was sort of Tim Geiger's teammate in 2026. So there are obvious barriers to doing it, but in terms of personal sporting ambition, I mean, why not do something that hasn't been done since, what, Jean-Michel Bale? I don't know. Who was the last guy to win a Premier Class Supercross title as well as, you know, the MXGP World Championship? Jet, you would assume, is off the table for those factors alone.
Yeah, and off the table of this hypothetical discussion. Vial, probably off the table as well, I'd imagine.
But he's not American, really. Okay. I said AMA Racing, but, you know, which American rider?
Okay.
I mean, would we be talking about Justin Barcia or not?
No, Chase. I think it would be Chase. He's interested in MXGP. He pays attention to it. Like, yeah.
Do you think, knowing him a little bit, would he be able to cope with all the different cultures, the traveling, the whole mindfuck of getting his head around Arco di Trento and then Lommel?
Yeah, I think so. To be honest, like apart from Chase, who is there? Everyone else is on their way out.
I would say like Cooper Webb. I mean, you know, Cooper's
he's not an outdoor guy.
You don't think so?
No, he's won one 450 outdoor in his career, and that's kind of the only worthy.
Yeah, but in terms of the mentality and the attitude, he's raced, you know, Paris Supercross a couple of times. He's had no qualms about doing Grand Prix appearances. You know, he sort of turned up in Charlotte. I know it was kind of like a local race for him, sort of. But, you know, I just think he's got a little bit of that mentality where, yeah, you know, I'll race, let's go for it sort of thing.
So you're not necessarily talking results. You're more talking like just...
Who could do it? Who can come over and, you know, be in the championship and, you know, make an impact? Again, that's why I think Barcia as well. I mean, you know, I mean, Amber's his wife is English. So I don't think the international thing would be such a big deal. And also... Justin's one of those guys who's raced sort of Bercy's, you know, for what, over maybe 10 years now, you know, since he first tried the Paris Supercross. So I think he would be a good candidate as well. But, you know, can you imagine somebody like Deegan?
I don't know how the Italians would know what to do with it. They'd all just be like staring inside of the truck, like, oh. Like every time he picks up a cup, they'd be like, ah. Be like watching an alien.
Prado expected to move to AMA Supercross. Wouldn't it be interesting if there was some top American name that decided to take the plunge and do the MXGP thing? And, you know, I think just it's all down to attitude. And the reason why Zach Osborne was able to make something of it is because he came over with a sort of zero expectations, I'd say, you know, just like kind of a mental clean slate, not getting too hung up. And if Zach did, he did it kind of in private and didn't, you know, let it affect him too much. I mean, he had some injuries as well. I think in Agueda, talking about Portugal, that was where he broke his arm racing, I think, in the first full year or the second year for the Dixon Racing team. You know, I can remember speaking to him in his motorhome and he was just wincing from the pain, carrying this huge, massive cast that seemed way too big for the injury. But yeah, you need that kind of Osborne mentality to be able to make it work.
I guess really what you need is that all balls mentality, really, to just, you know, pick yourself up and off you go. And speaking of which...
wasn't as good a Sieg as Polisport.
But All Balls Racing Group is a combination of the finest aftermarket power sports brands from across the US and Europe, combining OEM-level engineering and design capabilities with a world-class supply chain makes them the largest global supplier of critical aftermarket hard parts for the power sports industry. You can trust the All Balls Racing Group to provide the exact fitment and best quality in the industry at a price that fits your budget. We have everything to keep you running, or they do. I'm not involved. So, not we, they. Thank you to All Balls, thank you to EVS, and thank you to Polisport. Did we do MX2 fully? Are we done with that? I think we are. Oh, we didn't talk about... So Lagenfelder broke his collarbone. He had surgery Monday. The Gas PR was vague as vague can be, and all Lagenfelder has said is, we'll see you soon. I would imagine he's going to try and ride this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, broken collarbones. How many riders have actually been racing the following weekend with that? It depends on the severity of it. Of course, it is a Max Nagel type collarbone injury, or is it something just nice and clean that's been plated and he gets back out there?
I mean, I feel like there would have been a word from Gas saying Lagenfelder out if that wasn't being entertained.
Sometimes it depends. I think we touched on this before when teams and brands could announce a rider absence from a Grand Prix. Like, I know the FIM have already published their entry lists, and those are always a rough guide anyway. I mean, sometimes you see riders who have been officially entered that we know are injured even long term, because I think there's an obligation as well for teams to put a substitute in if it's within a certain amount of days. But it's also just possible they're just waiting to see how Simon is. Maybe he'll try and ride on something like Friday, and if he can compete, then he'll try. You know, it's good that he took some points at least in one moto.
Yeah, injuries are tough, as we know. Like, they are tough, and that's why I tell everyone I know to use EVS protection. EVS Sports, the original protective gear company, has been protecting champions and riders for almost 40 years and doesn't plan to stop anytime soon. What started out as one knee brace has evolved into a full line of protective gear to help keep riders safe while they do what they love. Check out evs-sports.com to see the same protective gear that pros RJ Hampshire, Kyle Chisholm, Axel Hodges, and Travis Pastrana all wear every day. Rate that transition on a scale of Polosport to All Balls? Middle?
Definitely, yeah. A little bit more towards Polosport, but being so, you know, quickly after the All Balls one, it would have been really impressive if you'd done it in the injury talk with Paul Jonas. I mean, if you managed to slide it in there, it would have been perfect.
Okay, well, okay, give me a second. I'm going to get Paul's back.
something to aspire to next time. You know, maybe when we got Jeffrey Herlings on the podcast next and we're asking about, you know, the 46 bones that he's broken in his career, then just, you know, say, oh, hang on a minute, Jeffrey. I just need to tell you about sort of, you know, EVS.
You know what his reply would be? He'd be like, am I getting a cut for this advertisement, yeah, mate? What a guy. I like Jeffrey. He's funny. Makes me laugh. I just like the people
get him on the
laugh.
Pod.
Yeah, we should. I don't know. What are we waiting for?
Well, maybe we can gang up on him. I mean, we're actually going to be on the ground at an MXGP sooner rather than later. The Grand Prix of Italy. Is it actually the Grand Prix of Italy? Or has it got another name in Majora?
I think Majora is Italy. You're right. Going to Saint-Jean though, aren't you?
No.
Oh, I swear that was always on your list.
No, it's off the list. I'm in Le Mans this weekend for the street bikes. Even though they're not street bikes. And then, yes, what have I got? Grand Prix of Catalonia for MotoGP, Grand Prix of Italy in Mugello for MotoGP. And with the postponement pending cancellation of the Grand Prix of Kazakhstan, means I can actually get to Majora. So cheap pizza on me.
We'll have fun. We will. You know what? I've never done this before, but similar to Willy Wonka, I would happily give you a golden ticket to sit in on Saturday with Sua.
Well, how do you know I'm not doing a Saturday with Jeffrey?
I swear to God, if you're going to say that you're doing a Saturday with Watson, I'm gonna just,
yeah, I haven't interviewed Ben for a while, actually. I think he's due a little interview. We could do it side by side. You know, you could have nervous glances across while I'm sort of speaking to Ben.
I would get Ben on this podcast, but I genuinely feel like I've forgotten how to talk to him like he's a professional rider. Like, I don't know how to do that. So I'm
just
scared.
Write a list of questions.
But I can't imagine myself sitting here and going, so how do you feel about your season?
Well, that's just the most boring question ever, isn't it? I mean, you can say to him, you know, how's your Italian, Ben?
Oh yeah, that's so much better. That's really that's a really come off the top shelf where Wheezy is. right. Anything else? Any other final thoughts, final topics, anything we need to get? I feel like we've not got ourselves in trouble. So anything about Stark maybe or electric bikes, anything at all?
No, what this whole Stark thing, we mentioned them way too much. We've done like WSX? Two mentions of them already. Yeah. I mean, get Stark on as an advertiser, and I think we can talk about them all the time. WSX, I've had some strange messages from people asking for contacts, and it seems like they're trying to resurrect themselves in terms of reach and organization. So God knows what's happening there.
Is Kurt Nickel one of the people who's reached out to you?
No.
Oh.
Oh wow. That's a name.
He's a consultant now.
Oh, wow. Okay. I mean, they have a major, major job / surgery to do in terms of their standing, their reputation, their credibility. Big, big work. I will give a mention again to the Infront Motor Racing Behind the Gate production on YouTube. And I really want to see what they can conjure up from Portugal, because I think some of the images are going to be incredible. I mean, as we've seen on social media, just the photographs alone from all the guys, props to all the media and the photographers who are working in Agueda. I can remember, you know, writing texts and reports while sort of sitting in a pool of water in the media center, freezing cold as well. So, I mean, the conditions must have been abysmal. I mean, equipment wrecking. So yeah, props to them. And yeah, just the Behind the Gate thing is one of the strongest sort of outlets in terms of content, I think, from MXGP at the moment. So yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing what the guys can do.
And yes, Federico, if you are listening, I'm coming to Majora. I'm available. And if you would like me to open the episode with a Toy Story comparison, I can also do that.
What about the rest of the Disney Pixar repertoire? I mean, we could go Cars or, I don't know, Finding Nemo. I mean, who's Bruce the Shark at the moment in MXGP?
That's Hurlings.
You reckon?
Merks. And then just suddenly he comes out and he's amazing and everyone else is like, oh no.
Yeah, but he's friendly. And then, you know, until he smells blood. Yeah, okay. I can see where you're going.
Honestly, I don't know why, but this is the best fun I've ever had. I'm going to make this a regular, I'm going to make this a separate podcast. And just, even if I have to do it by myself, I'm just going to run through it. Right. Are we done?
We're done.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Polosport, EVS, and All Balls Racing for their support of the MXGP podcast show. It's too late now, but I forgot to mention at the top that we are on YouTube as well as podcast platforms. So if you've just finished the audio and you want to rewatch, feel free. I don't know why you would. Thank you to Paul Jonas for coming on. Congratulations to him once again. A real feel-good story. Thank you to Adam Wheeler from the Paddock Pass podcast. Any plugs you want to do Paddock Pass podcast wise?
Yes, well, not really. I mean, we are on YouTube as well. And just if you're into sort of, or you're curious about MotoGP or Grand Prix racing, then go and listen to that. It's kind of cool. But I have a question, Lewis, as well as kind of waving at the camera. What is that behind you? Is that a signed rider shirt?
Hold on. I can't. I've got the YouTube video in front of me, so I can't see that because that's not in the, let me go to Zoom. Oh,
it's like a.
Yeah. Birthday present.
What
someone
is it?
Gave me a birthday present.
Oh wow, what is it?
Well, I don't know if I should say. No, it's fine.
Yeah.
I was talking to Chase at the weekend when it was my birthday, and he went, "Oh, it's your birthday. Here you go. Have this." So, oh, cheers.
Did he sign it for you?
No.
Oh. Well, I mean, try and get him to sign it this weekend and then just sort of put it in, you know, like a frame or something. That'd be cool.
Or eBay.
yeah, short of a bit of money, why not?
Yeah, exactly. Got a hustle. Yeah, brilliant. Right, thank you, everyone. We will be back next week for the MXGP of Galicia, and then we will be back for following week for the MXGP of France. This is week one of a triple header, so this is a slog. Please pray for us. Thanks for listening, and we will see you real soon.